So my name's Brad Butler.
My name is Noor Afshan.
And we're here watching The Scar with you. We're on film one. And we're just about to head into the title sequence with a soundtrack that was done by a group called Hazavuzu, based in Istanbul. And then from there, we head straight into the car. So it was always our intention to start off the first image on the female protagonist, Yenge, and for her to be listening in on these kind of conversations, these sort of male fumes erupting around her.
We initially planned to shoot in both the UK and Turkey. And we'd pretty much settled on actually working with Turkish actors that were based, or certainly moving between, you know, the UK and Turkey. So, whenever you put a casting call out, you always meet loads of talent. And I love casting for that reason, because you have a sort of idea in your head, and then someone walks into the room. Like the minute Captain, who's the policeman, he walked into the room, just knew he was Captain. But then the other side of that is that you also meet lots of other people, and you just think, well, it shifts your ideas as well. Maybe that person could be Captain, you know.
So at this point in the film, film one, we're sort of trying to set up where you are in a way. And already, one of the things that was really exciting for us is people are quite familiar with road movies, so you can pretty much start people there, and then it starts to get quite interesting if you feel like, you know, an audience knows where they are. How can you start to shift and move and start to move your characters around? And so we started to work on things which are slightly unclear as to where they come from. Are they inside the character's mind? Are they ideas? Are they fictions? Did they happen? The car's moving, then it's stationary. So you start to break up time and create a series of smaller loops, then larger loops. In a way, for us, of course, the car is a sort of psychological space. And so we also knew in this stage, in the beginning, we were creating a vocabulary we could use into film two. So we knew that we already create things in film one just to drop them in, and they would start to be things that we could take. So, example, the chicken story in film one, which I'm watching at the moment, is picked up in a very different way in film two.
There's a really, I'm going to forget, we'll have to make a reference to this and look it up, but there's a really well-known film, Turkish film, Once Upon a Time in Anatolia. Once Upon a Time in Anatolia, which is an amazing film. But in that film, this is an incredible scene. There's the guy who's whatever his status is, but you think he's the militant, he's the subversive. He's in the car with these guys who you think are, you know, the state, but they could also just be like hired, you know, thugs. Anyway, so he's really like squashed between all, but they're all the threatening violence and power is just being told through this really banal conversation about yogurt. And each of the four men, not the guy who's the one who's being subjected to the conversation and subjected to whatever awful things are going to happen to him, he's not speaking, but all the other guys, all the other men are speaking about yogurt. And I think we just, you know, it was a reference when we were writing the script that we all knew that scene and we all knew that film. But then it came out of like just an anecdote. Someone was talking about they actually know this recipe. There is a recipe. So we started to construct this chicken story from those. That's my memory.
And also it was how to tell a story about torture, because in a way we didn't want the characters in the car talking about torture or these things, or in fact talking business so much. you've got to imagine it's like a long car journey. So we started to lay something in here which allowed a power dynamic, and you can see in it that Yenge, the female protagonist, she's not on her front foot, able to really partake yet in this conversation. The politician doesn't quite catch what they're really speaking about, you know. So there's sort of different layers and that work through.
Yeah, it is introducing the characters. I mean, Yenge, I mean, she, right from the first, I mean, I think Brad talked about the fact that the film opens with the camera on her. I mean, she's never a victim of male violence. She's not a victim. She's a survivor. But in this whole film, she hardly says a word, you know. So it's a very challenging role for her. She played it brilliantly, but you know, she's yeah, her role was silent, was mute in the first film, as we're talking about. But she gets a couple of good lines. She gets that great line about the cigarettes. Yeah.
She's an interesting person, though, isn't she? Because in a way, her presence changes the other. They sort of, even though she says nothing, it was like, how can you shoot the film where it all seems to revolve around her anyway? Even though the others are given this charisma, how can you have it where the female character, who we're denying speech in a way because we're constructing a situation where that's her become her reality, how can it still feel like it's going to evolve around her? So you're sort of like undoing some characters, and in the undoing you're sort of building her strength at the same time.
Well, like the Reese and Yenge story, there's lots of stories going on as well. So there's a story and a dynamic between Reese and Yenge, but then there's also a story between Captain and Yenge. And then there's a story between Captain and Reese. And then there's a story between our Captain and Reese. So there's lots of, you know, so it's things that we, I suppose, are fascinated with. It's like what's said, what's not said, but what's like felt, you know. So it's just trying to sort of build, that space, the ecology, the tensions, again, the hallucinations.
We're watching Captain now. He's with the car, looking out the side window at the scarred body. And, you know, you get scar, car, this sort of intrusion of reality, which is this political speech by his the politician, which at the same time, we called it the hollow speech. And so it was a sort of speech that itself loops but doesn't quite say anything. And that's the beauty of the speech. And Captain is a sort of interesting character who's on one side trying to handle these kind of hallucinations in his scenario. But at the same time, I always sense from the way he played it as an actor that he could sort of call things out. He had an intelligence about him, an intelligence to know where he was and what his situation was, but in not enough capacity to remove himself from the situation. And I think we were very pleased with how this hollow speech was pitched by the actor in the end. And and this sort of quiet observation we ask for between the mirror, between Captain, who sort of sees something, trying to make a connection with Yenge.
Well, we imagined that they sort of they both came from possibly similar backgrounds, you know. So even though they would have obviously existed through the different set of privileges or oppressions, you know, but in somehow there would have been some sort of like a kindred spirit of like, I kind of know where you come from. You know, you come from that kind of family and I come from this kind of family. We might have grown up in certain similar villages around certain, you know. So there was a sort of play there, but at the same time, the sort of dynamic around, well, maybe Captain wouldn't really be able to sort of like bull a woman like Yenge, you know. So there's a kind of, there's a sort of flirtation there, but it's also, it's a boundary he'd never be able to cross because he can't, because it's Reese's girlfriend.
This is, we've only got a couple of bits of text without voiceover on them. One of the things, I think we thought about that way of working with text on the screen and subtitles from earlier works we've made. In fact, one of the first works we ever did had subtitles without a voice. It's called Non-Places. And it's something to do with how you internalize text on a screen into your own words.
And your own voice, isn't it?
Yeah, and like, where do you place that? And do you ascribe it to him, to something outside of him, to yourself? And that's why that scene exists in the way it does. And the text itself is slightly more literary, I would say, in the way it's delivered. It's less of a spoken text. And that interested us. And this scene is so difficult. This is a complex scene with Reese at the back of the boot. Yenge's at the front, who's about to see a car driven by herself going past in like a parallel lines, parallel universes. But at the same time, we're with Reese's story about the different generations that exist and what they feel they can and can't do and who that belongs to.
But it's also a bit of a, you know, the boys jostling at the back of the boot, you know, because in this scene, he's also basically, you know, saying to Captain, you know, at the end of the day, I'm the man, you know. And so it's kind of like there's a power play between those two, and he's reasserting that he's top dog. And he does it in this really quite chilling. Yeah, it's I find this scene. So it's complex because you've got so many things going on, but I love it because of how it moves between being in Yenge's space and the freedom of this glimpse into this parallel universe. Meanwhile, they're still bound by these two rams, basically jostling around as to who's potentially basically going to be more, do you know what I mean, top dog than the other. But I mean, the sort of simplicity and the complexity that I've enjoyed working on with this film, because if you take it simply at what is being said, it's actually a very, very simple story. But it's what lies under the surface of what's being said. So this scene also, we wanted to put in there some of these, you know, like where do we put the facts, or where do we put the things that we've researched? So this thing about the grey wolves, you know, the grey wolves, which the Reese's character, you know, he was the head. This is a nationalist
youth movement,
yeah. You know, that has it's not just bound by, it's transgresses the borders of Turkey. So this story about the, I think there's intergenerational relationship to how brotherhood, but how patriarchy works, how older violent men groom younger men into their job of violence. But you could also say that's also how the state grooms young men into its violence of perpetrating its wars. So, you know, there's a story here being told about father and son, about two men that are like jostling out who's basically going to be the man. At the same time, there's this thing about what it means to recruit young men into, like I said, the work of violence.
This memento mori scene. Memento mori is kind of like a, you could define it as like things that belong to the dead in a way. And here she is at the beginning of the scene. It's a little bit harder for Western audience to pick up that she's holding a pregnancy test. Links through to an image much earlier on in the film. And his memento mori from the pregnancy test to the photographs, which become a really big deal in the second film. And then I've always been fond of that line. Who's going to arrest me, you, him? do you realise how many streets on the way to the court you'd have to pass that are named after me? Before we go into this sort of, again, this idea that Captain driving the car sees himself on the road, and that's what causes the crash. It's part of this hallucination set up from almost the first few scenes. Comes back round.
Which we haven't spoken about, but we've run out of time from this session. But there's a whole a narrative around the resistant dead, and about which, you know, there's more. I think there's more work to be done, but we've started to sort of like open up the space, or I would like to open up the space around the difference between talking about like structural state enforced violence, or state violence, or structural violence, and the disappeared people disappeared, and then on the other side open up a space to try and find a way to talk about the agency of the resistance, which is beyond your own lifetime.